Ladies and gentlemen, we are beginning our second year of Fans of Power. And to really commemorate this special occasion, we've decided to invite someone on here that me personally, and I'm sure for a lot of everyone listening who has been a part of my passion for He-Man since I was 3 years old. He had no idea that his work had been with me this long. And as well as into the 90s with his works on both X-Men series and various animated shows of the 1980s, from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends to Smurfs and a variety of all kinds of shows that people who listen to this podcast obviously watch at some point or another, even shows like Captain Planet, the opening sequence to the G.I. Joe cartoon movie from the 80s. This man is responsible for so much and so many of the most beloved mini comics that were given to us as kids when we got our favorite figures. Mr. Larry Houston has agreed to let us just build up his ego probably higher than it's ever been before. And we're so happy to do it. In fact, I'd pay the man if I could right now. So he's agreed to do it for free here. So
that, how's that for an introduction? My God, man of many talents there.
Well, I wish my kids shared your enthusiasm for me. You know, to me, I'm just dad, and I never get that around the house.
Oh, believe me, if I was your neighbor, I'd just be knocking on your door like Dennis the Menace, you know, just constantly at your door like, hey, you know, hey, Mr. Houston. Absolutely. Well, I guess, and of course, with us as always is Joe. Joe Motto is here, of course. I don't want to, sorry, Joe.
I'd freak out too. I mean, just to have somebody of his stature on the show and, you know, going to be talking to us about all the stuff he did. I mean, it's an overwhelming feeling. So I understand your passion for it. And I probably would have forgot too what I was talking about. So, but Tyler, so you wanted to start it off, asking questions? Because, I mean, it's a pleasure. And Larry, thank you so much for joining us. Because, I mean, it's an honor to have you on the show.
I'm glad to be here. I'm glad that, you know, one of the things I'm happy about is that, you know, all the efforts and stuff I put into the shows, you know, you never know if it reaches anybody. You know, you draw stuff, you put your best work out there, and it just goes out into the ether, and you just never see it. So it's nice to know that, you know, some of the work I did was appreciated. Yeah, that's cool.
Oh, I mean, it's appreciated, you know, I mean, especially in the Masters community for the stuff we have, because, you know, we enjoy the figures, the cartoons, the comics just also equally. But with you, I didn't know if you you got a little stat here. I didn't know if you know the stat, but you hold the record, if I'm not mistaken, for drawing the most mini comics out of all the artists for Masters of the Universe, for the vintage Masters of the Universe comics. You hold that record. I think it's 11. So be proud of that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all. I thought it was only 8 or something. Lee Norling was the go between Mattel Toys and the artist. He got the assignment to produce the Mattel comic, the He-Man comic books, and because we were friends, I was the first one he called to work on it.
Okay.
And so. That's how it started. Is the audio good?
Oh, you're good. Oh, you're good. Yeah, we're eating this up now. Yeah, we're excited. Oh,
okay. And so, Lee contracted the writers to write the scripts, and then I would get the script and I'll start drawing it. And basically, I think because of my training of working on G.I. Joe, because it's an entirely, everything is toys, I always asked them for, you know, the toys, the characters, so I could draw the characters. And in the case of the very first issue, it was this thing. The I don't know if you can see it.
Yes, that one.
I asked them, where's the toys? Is there any toys? And they said, nope, there's no toys. They just kind of made up new characters. And so I said, would they, you know, kind of make up new ones? He said, sure. So I proceeded to create the visual for Geltor and for the bad guy. And I started having some fun.
So and, you were just given names then in the script, and you weren't even given a description of Geldor. You just went with it, and you did your own vision of Geldor and everything. Or did you also come up with the name Geldor? I was curious.
No, the name was given by the writer, but I created everything else. His look, his armament, and at the time, you know, Mr. T was pretty cool back then, you know, way back when.
Yeah.
So that kind of influenced the design of the characters, and I just kind of made up the character. It was kind of cool. Geltor, and let's see if I can open the book. Let's see, Prince Dacon, I think it's
yeah.
And let's see if I can find. Yeah, basically, I just made them all up, you know, and part of the thing I wanted to do was just to enlarge the world of Filmation. He-Man was by, okay, let me add some other, to the series. So that's why in the first one I added, you know, a good black guy and a bad guy and just had some fun with it. You know, in another issue, I think it was this one called...
Double-edged sword.
Yes. Sword.
Sword.
Yeah.
He's picking some winners. He's picking the ones that we're probably going to pick on him and ask him stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So on that one, I decided to let me create an Asian culture and have some fun with that. And I think I did another one here where.
Slave City, I bet. I bet you're grabbing Slave City.
I'm grabbing Slave City. Yes.
Yeah. There you go.
That one. Yeah. And I tried to create some American Indian type characters.
I love it. That's what's great what you did. I mean, you brought so much culture and diversity to, you know, Masters, because there wasn't, you know, much, you know, culture diversity. I mean, sure, we had alien races and creatures and things, but I mean, like you said, you had Native American, Asian, and African American, and especially for the mini comics. I mean, that's definitely, you know, we're never really seeing that in the mini comics. So, I mean, it was really different and special to have a whole different cultures and ethnicities into our world.
Yeah, I asked Lee, I said, hey, do you think there's a problem with it? He said, no, he checked with them and they didn't have a problem. So everything went forward. And so, you know, everything was cool. So that's where I was able to have some fun with it. And, you know.
And I don't know if you realized those characters that basically you just showed, I mean, they're some of the most iconic and cult heroes from those mini comics. I mean, it's like that's what everybody can almost envision. Tyler knows it, and of course all the Masters fans know it, but it's like, you know, people, you know, back then we wanted Geldor, you know, we wanted Lodar on the cover of Slave City, we wanted these characters into figures. We never got them, but you know, you fast forward all these years later for classics, and you know, fans voted and they wanted, and bam, we finally got Geldor as a figure, and we know that I think they were working on Lodar too. So I mean, how does that feel for you to know that you created unique, original, iconic characters from the mini comics that, you know, almost everybody knows and remembers?
I feel good about it. I mean, I just kind of, it's kind of nice, you know, to know that, you know, the ideas I came up with, they were pretty much, you know, the designs and everything were pretty much like a stream of consciousness. The pencil, when I was drawing them, it was actually drawing itself. It was kind of like I was making it up on the spot and designing everything. It was like straight from the subconscious onto the page. So I think I eventually found a copy of Geldor somewhere. Someone had made one. I think they finally made a copy of him. So it was kind of nice to see my designs in a toy.
Yeah, I figured they would have sent you a free one, you know, for having a made. Finally figured, you know, hey, send one off to Larry Houston, give him a, you know, a free figure of the character he created, you would think. That would have been a nice gesture.
Yeah, I don't even think they knew me back then, because pretty much I never saw them. They never saw me. Everything was Lee Nortling was the face that they saw every day. You know, they didn't see me. They didn't see Bruce Timm. They didn't see all the other people who worked on it. I never saw him face to face. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's the interesting thing is like I haven't done anything with them, but you know, I never signed any paperwork with these people, so technically I, you know, I guess I could do something, but you know, I haven't.
So you're kind of like the, I don't know, the man behind the curtain or something, hiding behind there, the guy doing all the magic.
Yeah, kind of. I've always been a low-key person. I'm like the man behind the scene. I've never been a public speaker. I haven't been the guy out there trying to get all the publicity and stuff. I kind of like doing the work and letting the work speak for itself. And
that's why you let guys like us do all the publicity for you. What you do best.
And yeah, that's right.
High level here.
Yeah, no, I probably do need to get hire agents and have them talk for me because it feels itself, you know?
Well, you definitely deserve your time in the spotlight. That's why, I mean, I'm so glad Tyler contacted you, you know, and that, you know, you agreed to do this episode because I think fans need to hear all this stuff, the things that you did. And, you know, we're going to pick your brain on more stuff. And I know Tyler, he's probably going to right now jump into asking you some other questions, but yeah, we're definitely going to be picking your brain.
I'm enjoying just having Larry here. Like we got him, it's here.
It's amazing.
Both me and him were just like the level of excitement, like, this is really happening. Like, it felt so surreal, like Larry has agreed to come talk to us, and then this is just like something you just never really envisioned, because, you know, wholeheartedly, the work that you did in those mini comics was stuff that I would go back to as much as I did watching the Filmation cartoons for references, for just looking at the way you depicted certain characters, which we'll get to at one point. That I would just go back and like, this is my definitive version of this character based on how Larry drew him. And it's still to this day, Clash of Arms, I've mentioned on a previous podcast that based on your artwork alone should have been like the number one bestseller on the, you know, like the New York Times, you know, best-selling list, you know, just that mini comics be available in every library in America.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there it is.
That's right there. Yeah. Yeah. No.
Oh, man.
I tried to do, because I knew the comic was going to be so small, condensed the storytelling that to get the. Where you needed to get from point A to point B, I tried to get that done in small panels. The fights, I tried to draw action, but knowing that this is going to shrink, create layouts that were very, very and clear. And one of the things I like to do, which was there's an artist named Jack Kirby. He used to draw a lot of two-page spreads in the comic books. On the first issue, that's how come I did this, the two-page spread out of it, and then I kept doing that in several issues. It's really well, so it's like, that was cool. Trying to pace the story so that the dialogue scenes like to get you from point A to point B were like concise, but I wanted some room so I could draw something big and have the action scenes, you know?
Oh, man.
Let's see, what was it? I tried to do the storytelling in small panels, but, you know, let's see if I can see it here. You know, I tried to make big panels so that you could tell exactly what was going on and having some fun with it, you know?
Right.
My inspiration for doing a lot of these books are in Jean Buscema. I think they were excellent storytellers, and inspired me when I'm trying to draw this is that I try influences when I was making these little stories.
Well, you definitely put a lot of action-packed, you know, panels in there, and the storytelling is like you said, you wouldn't even need words half the times just by seeing the emotion. I mean, like the scene with, you know, like Clawful, you know, his claw getting caught by that log. I think Tyler always loved that scene too. It's it's so raw and real, and I mean everything you did. But then you do stuff that, not only all that, what gets me going is wondering again, to pick your brain, you know, this is an issue to where it highlights Fisto as being the main person. You know, usually you're always seeing He-Man in the comics all the time. And it wasn't about He-Man this time. At the end, sure, he shows up. And that's when it was the one thing I've talked about in a podcast before, and everybody gets a kick out of. He-Man shows up with a laser pistol, not his power sword. And that's what I had to ask you. Did they ask you to draw that? Or did you think, hey, let's just give He-Man something different? Because I love that he showed up with something besides a power sword.
My best recollection, can't talk right now.
That's all right.
Is that I made up a pistol to try and get it. I think I did. I think that's what I did. I mean, I don't have to talk to the writer, but I think that's what I did to make it more interesting. So it's not just a sport and stuff, you know?
And it was, because it's unexpected. It was always one of those moments like, wait, what just happened? He-Man just showed up and he's got a pistol. And, you know, he's using it to shoot down
the face, too. That was so awesome, too, is that the type of violence that you threw into this stuff, which to me, violence, that seems too harsh a word, just all the action and ass-kicking that you threw in. Because, yeah. And this is by far, if it hadn't been able to figure out already, my favorite mini comic because of all the brawling that goes on in this book, you know, from Fisto being slapped around by Clawful and Jitsu and so forth. But seeing He-Man take his pistol and shoot one of Skeletor's guards in the face, at least that's how I always took it. And that's what I'm going to take is it in the face, because Larry wanted to say, this guy is the most powerful man in the universe, and he will shoot a man in the face.
Yeah.
But,
that was so cool. He made a statement. Yeah, I had him shoot him. It's like,
yes, right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. He made a statement. That's all. Oh man, that is the perfect way of describing that.
Yeah, I just had fun. I mean, I just started. They let me do what I wanted. So I said, oh, that's what he would do because the dialogue just before that, you know. Skeletor is talking crap. Evil warriors are back. And then he, okay.
Oh, man. That is just too cool, man. This guy needs to be doing so much more storytelling and writing for and illustrating for He-Man even today. Yes. Unbelievable.
That's the goal. Well, that's what we want. We'd love to see you come back because, you know, Super 7 is a company that's now doing Masters of the Universe. They're doing the new classics figures. They're going to be doing vintage style ones again, like in the 80s. And the hopes is that possibly they would pack mini comics with them. And that would be my goal. I mean, if you were approached, would you, and God hope, you know, would you do mini comics again if asked? I mean, I'd freak out just to see somebody return who did it in the 80s. I'd go bananas.
No, I would love to. I like telling stories. And then, you know, if they ever ask me, yeah, I'd go for it.
We're going to push for this, Larry, man. We're going to get some polls. Me and Tyler, we're going to spread this around. We're going to get it. It's going to be Larry Houston to come back for mini comics. That's going to be the thing that everybody's going to have to go for.
Yeah, this was this one with the Slave City. This is probably the only issue I ever got comments from. I guess the parents thought I had gone over the line.
Yeah, but that just on the cover? Was it really set parents on fire, I guess?
I don't know if it's the cover or the interior, but yeah, this one, you know.
Do you remember the flag? They said? I mean, do you remember any of these comments? Because that's just, to me, I never would see an issue. I mean, especially with all the, you know, possible violence. It's been in a lot of the mini comics or certain situations. I mean, what did they possibly have a problem with?
I'm not sure. That's something I probably would have to ask Lee Norland. Lee told me that, you know, they had gotten some parents' criticism of Slave City and thought it, you know, it went too far. I'm paraphrasing it. It's not exactly what he said, but... you know, I created an extended fight between He-Man and, you know, and the bad guy. And I had like two pages of just like, hey, let's just have a big fight. And in my mind, I was like channeling, these are scenes similar to what you would see in Thor or Captain America. And I was just on a gut level, I was instinctively feeling those type of scenes, and that's what I put into the shot here, you know, that type of fighting. And yeah, I'm not sure what they picked up on, but yeah, that was that's probably the only one.
Well, it's unfortunate because that, again, is another memorable mini comic for most fans because, again, characters you created that everybody wanted, like Lodar. And even, like, I'm curious, the kobolds, those, like, creatures that are in there, was that out of your head, too? Was that your own vision?
Yeah, I made it. Yeah, those are just bad guys I made up.
Man, you just did way too much. I mean, it's like in your vision of Garn, and it's just, I don't know. It's like I said, it's just, it's bananas to talk with some. I still can't believe it. Like I said, and I know people listen to me talk, but I'm just giddy because I can't believe I'm talking with somebody who worked on pieces from my childhood. It's bonkers.
It was, like I said, a stream of consciousness. When I was drawing the creatures, that's what the pencil drew it. I didn't design it, but I just kind of drew it, and that's what it was. And it was just fun making up all these characters.
When you made those up, it's a question Tyler had. We were both kind of thinking something, but Tyler had a question. He was curious, were you ever under the impression that maybe Mattel back then would have turned your original characters into action figures? Did they ever show any interest of that by chance, or is that something that maybe never came up?
Something that never really came up because the TV show was cranking out episode after episode, and they had their own line of characters that they were creating within house that, you know, they were actually selling in stores. So, yeah, my stuff in the mini comics just went under the radar. I was basically creating entertainment for a different audience, but it was not for the toy division. So, yeah, I never really thought about it, any of the characters turning into toys.
And that's a shame. Go ahead, Tyler.
Well, I was just going to say, because two of the mini comics that you did essentially were also turned into Filmation episodes. Tale of Two Cities is essentially Slave City with characters like Garn in there, but Garn is drawn as an African-American as opposed to a Native American.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Double-edged sword. Oh, you didn't know that?
We'll get you some picks. We have to pick them.
I was so eager to ask you if you had known that two of the mini comics you did were Filmation episodes too.
No, I had no knowledge of that. Wow. Okay.
Wow. Yeah. And he's given a fight with He-Man in the arena as opposed to fighting Lodar. So it's
okay.
Yeah. So there's a lot of similar, and I was just because there's so many similarities to Double-Edged Sword. To a certain extent, and then especially Slave City and Tale of Two Cities. So I was just curious if you worked at Filmation, I thought maybe there was some sort of connection where they were talking to you, because I know Filmation and Mattel worked closely together and things like that. So that was something
But the writers probably did knowledge of it.
Oh, we lost you.
Oh, sorry. I said that.
There you are.
Yeah, I said I didn't. Uh-oh. Audio's going.
You're breaking up again there, bud.
Yeah,
you're not getting a virus live on the show, are you?
Hey, my computer is. I'm just trying to close.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Russian hackers have started World War III. And we're starting it from Larry's computer.
Wrong man to mess with here. I'll tell you that right now. My interview, mess with our interview with Larry Houston here.
I'm not sure why. I can see my computer is like doing 97% of some other program. That's probably why. Just keep closing stuff.
Well, see if it Tyler, helps. While he's working on that, maybe you can talk about some of the differences between the Filmation episodes and the mini comics, okay. Like you were talking about further. Just kind of go through some of those.
Okay. Yeah. Well, while we get Larry back on track here, just to elaborate on that, Tale of Two Cities, He-Man does get amnesia like he does in Slave City and is captured much like he is in Slave City. And of course, Queen Belina, also a black character, has He-Man thrown into the arena to fight for his life against Garn, the current champion, much like in Slave City, where he's thrown into the arena to fight Garn. I can't remember if he's champion in that, but they're forced to fight each other in the arena, and then He-Man gets his memory back. And So it's pretty much kind of follows the same backbone. There's obviously with Filmation, they're telling a much bigger story where He-Man's trying to escort a princess back to her kingdom and gets captured by Queen Belina once he's knocked unconscious during a storm. But in Slave City, there's a princess also. But there's creatures, but in Slave City, and then there's like the Queen's guards. They're kind of similar because they're both creatures. So there are a lot of similarities. He-Man decides Garn's fate, just like in Slave City. He decides not to kill him, so to speak, and become friends in the end. So it pretty much does follow the same story that Larry illustrated, with some slight differences, obviously going with characters of ethnicity in both stories too. So very interesting. And I remember when I finally did see Slave City, I'm like, wait, this is very similar to Tale of Two Cities here.
Mm-hmm.
So just one of those many questions you just kind of wonder, like, were they deliberately linked together, or was it just coincidence? And I guess apparently it was just coincidence here.
Yeah, okay. It was. Am I any better?
Yes.
You're good now.
Okay. Yeah, good now.
And my wife is back there doing something behind me.
There you go. It's live. We got it going live.
Yeah, she's in the kitchen doing something right behind me. There she goes. Okay. And she can't hear us talk, but she can hear me talk. Okay. And she's doing something over there in the kitchen. All right. Yeah. Okay. I closed as many windows as I could so I could keep talking to you. So hopefully.
Okay.
I'd
love to ask you, I guess, what was the, I guess, essential starting process when you're given the script? Where do you go from there? I mean, do you work with the writer any, or you pretty much just take the script? And once you were kind of given so much creativity to run with, do you pretty much just kind of go and start out with random sketches of what Gelder could look like, or what Garn could look like, or what's the process that you would go through in starting a mini comic and finishing it?
Well, back then, what I would do is I would get the script, and usually it was like maybe 8 pages. It wasn't that long, but I would go through the script and try and see, okay, how can I paste this? So I basically tried to put double page spreads, if I could, almost every issue, so I could have a lot of room to draw. And so I would try and, because of my training of working in animated scripts, I knew how to read a script and see, okay, I can tell this story of what the writer wants I don't need a lot of real estate to get from point A to point B. You know, something happened, we're going to go in here and get it back or save this person. So I tried to pace it, and then so that I could have pages of like big action sequences. But as far as design, if they had no, unless they gave me a toy to work from, they usually gave me a toy with three views. If they didn't, I just kind of, all the characters made it up on the spot. I just drew it. Like I said, it just came straight from the subconscious to the page. The design is exactly what was in my mind. It was, no, I didn't design anything. I just kind of drew it.
So not like you're not really drawing anything from reference other than the figures they gave you, like, you know, Garn, for example, or Gelder. You're just kind of creating it. It is just as you're just thinking it, and it just kind of all just comes together right there. Not like a lot of concept drawings or anything like that.
No. It was pretty much, I kind of had, when I read the script and what was going on, I had an image of what it could look like. And when the first time I drew him, that's when he got designed. And so it was very spontaneous when I drew it.
Oh, goodness, guys. Man, just look at that. It's just like, I just thought it and put it on the paper, and that's all there is to it, man. And what talent, man. Good grief. Unbelievable.
It was just fun. And so I just kind of I trust my instincts a lot. And so I just kind of let my instincts tell me what this character should look like and just start drawing the character. And then he just started forming itself, you know, the African American, the Asian characters, the American Indian characters. It just came out the pencil. I just went for it. I did a lot of that on a lot of shows I worked on. I would draw and make up stuff in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. like I wrote the second episode of Spider-Man's Amazing Friends. I didn't get credit for it, but I wrote it. It was the one called Swarm. It was a character that was designed,
which one was that?
I was trying to get the.
Which episode was it of Spider-Man's Amazing? I know it was the second episode. Which one was it in particular?
I'm not sure what number they gave it, but the series started. We were having a problem premises network. And the premise of Swarm.
All Swarm.
Produced at the time, he wrote one episode, and so either the first or second episode, and I got a chance to storyboard half the show. It was a lot of fun, and I was pretty young at the time. I think I was like 25 years old, and
that is great. Like I said, with all the original stuff, like you said, that comes out of your head. And even, you know, when you're talking about for Masters of the Universe, some things, you know, like you said, of established characters, you might have looked at a figure or something. But there's like I said, I have so many just geeked out nerd things I want to ask you because there's so many things I like that you did. But even your Castle Grayskull. Everybody, I think that's the thing. We know when it's a mini comic you worked on because on the cover, your Castle Grayskull definitely has a unique look. It's almost more like a fort in a way. A fort, and then the way the head comes up and it's like a real long drawbridge and not a jawbridge. But did you feel like, you know, you wanted to show your own interpretation of the castle, or, you know, was that something they said, hey, give a spin, or just like you've been saying, you just wanted to do your twist and your take?
It's more of the latter. I just wanted to do my take on it and do my version of the stuff. So, yeah, so I just kind of did it. So I went ahead and did that.
Yeah, it came out great. I mean, that's one that, like I said, it's memorable. I have to mention one other creature, though. One creature that this was my favorite. We did a retrospective, like, you know, Tyler and I will always talk about, like, on each episode normally, like, we'll do a character profile, and we talk about the many versions of somebody. Well, one time we brought up Modulok and, you know, all the different forms he's had so far. And then at the end, we kind of, like, vote which was our favorite. And I voted your Modulok from that mini comic was my favorite because he's so ghoulish and freaky, and he just reminded me of some like little creatures from a movie called The Ghoulies. It was just weird creatures. I love the take you did. I love how that he was presented in little boxes throughout the story, but that's a figure I always wondered, was this Modulok? And, you know, like I said, I always wanted to thank you for that one and what your thought was behind him of, you know, making him so ghoulish and freaky, you know, different from the toy, I guess.
I wanted to, you know, he's a weird character because he's all these different parts and stuff. And it's like, okay, you know, they gave me the toy, they gave me all the views. I'm going, okay, I got to make this work somehow. This is really off the hook here. And I followed the script, and I just kind of tried to make it work, you know, trying to make it, you know, he's such a little guy, so I tried to make him, hey, he's little, but he's a little formidable, too, because he's like this little runt running around doing things you don't expect.
Yeah, because yours is, it's freaky. I mean, you know, from both heads, I mean, really freaky and unique and different, and I don't believe he was ever, you know, Tyler might be able to correct me possibly, but I don't ever remember him interpreted with any type of claws, which that's why I love that. I was like, oh my God, he's even got claws for this module. Like, this thing is just disgustingly awesome. So, I mean, I don't remember. Tyler, was there ever claws for Modulok, or am I just gone nuts?
All right. The figure itself had claws. So, like, it looks like Larry was just kind of following the toy itself. And of course the, you know, the Filmation one also had, you know, are you talking about like, you know, the actual hand claws?
Yeah, the hand claws. Yeah, because I'll be honest, I haven't grabbed my toy of Modulok in so long, I couldn't remember, but he actually had claws on his hands? Because I was thinking this was completely unique and original, what Larry did, which it basically is anyways, but he did have claws? Am I cracking up? Jeez, I can't believe I screwed up.
Yeah, he's got, you know, the red fingers with his long, big white claws, yeah.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, crab-like, like Buzz Off, those kind of pincher claws.
Okay, like, no, as far as I know, that's definitely an original Larry.
I knew it! Larry created the most awesome original Modulok. So there you go, Larry. You created the best freaking Modulok, and I'm going to make this thing, because I know that they're probably, I don't know if they ever will. I hope they would just bring back the vintage, you know, styles of some of these things, and maybe if demanded, make it. But you put so much, and now that's the other thing, is beyond all the amazing art you did you draw, did you write many of the issues or have parts of, you know, writing form or at least input to change it? I was just curious how much writing.
Oh, in terms of writing, no, I never got involved with that. I would be given scripts. And then from that point on, I could be creative as I wanted to. And so, but I followed what was in the written script and put that on the page.
I mean, I guess that was it. If there was ever something like you thought maybe didn't flow well, I mean, did you ever give suggestions like, you know, maybe, hey, do you think you guys could try this? Or did you just, hey, you just drew what they said and what the heck? I was just curious if you try to give some input of maybe switching something up.
Oh, well, there's interpretation. What I would tell, what they would write stuff. And then if I thought, you know, I would interpret stuff. Basically, I tried to keep the essence of what they wanted me to do, but I would convert it into something that would work in a comic book, because sometimes, you know, what you write, it won't fit into this little mini comic book because it's so small. So I would basically, I'd adapt, but I tried to keep the essence of what the writer wanted. I would just adapt it to what I thought worked best.
Okay. Cause you are, as I've been telling you, you're pretty much a man of a lot of firsts, you know. I mean, beyond a lot of the different interpretations of things we've seen, working on the most mini comics as for drawing them. I mean, you also, I don't know if you know, you're kind of responsible for, maybe this is intentional, I'm not sure, but for example, in Double-Edged Sword, you know, we know He-Man is battling and slashing through all those plant creatures. Tyler knows where I'm going with this. All right.
Had a discussion before on Larry.
Yeah, so, you know,
I know where he's going.
All right, so, you know, you're sitting there, and, you know, He-Man's slashing through the plant creatures, and we know, of course, since, you know, we can't really have too much violence and stuff, they can't show blood, so it's like a plant juice that it's showing in color. But at the end, towards one of the last panels, after He-Man slashes through one of those plant creatures, they have this image of He-Man standing there holding his sword, and it's not juice coming off the sword. This time, it's blood. So I guess my question is, were they originally thinking of maybe having these plants squirt out red blood and kind of decide, no, let's go green? And I know you didn't do any of the coloring, of course, but did you remember? Did they mention the thing of blood? Because you're responsible for at least having some part of having blood in a mini comic, which is awesome.
I think I had, I implied or drew, you know, juices coming out of a plant. And I assumed that the writer was going, I mean, sorry, the colorist is going to color it appropriately. So, I drew the, you know, drops of blood, drops or whatever. But I knew the, you know, when it gets to the color, they know what to do.
Well, I guess they snuck it in because through the rest of the whole comic, it was just yellowish green juice. But on that last panel, it had a little red blood, because the reason I bring this up is there's always the topic in Masters of the Universe, like, you know, should there be blood? Was there blood? And you leave it to Joe Amato here to bring up just two parts, you know, one in one original mini comics where there's a little bit of saliva, like, I mean, not saliva, but blood coming from a teeth from a creature. And then here we go, Double-Edged Sword. He-Man's sword is actually dripping with blood. So I was like, yes, there was blood in many comics, whether it was intentional or not. So, man, you're part of just history in so many levels. I don't know if you understand.
Okay. Let's assume that the colors, if it's blood, okay. I'm looking at it right now. I'm trying to see where it's at, but I guess it's somewhere here.
Go all the way towards the end.
Towards the last, towards the very end of the book.
Yeah, go all the way towards the end. It's the pretty much the last page. And
yeah, it's the top of the page.
Top of the last page. Yep, you're exactly at the right. He-Man's holding that sword, and you see the blood dripping.
Oh, my God, you're right.
Hey! Look what you did!
There's blood there. I didn't, you know, I never noticed that.
There you go.
That was the colorist.
It's cool. It's just, yeah, it's just.
I did know that.
So you kind of learn something new every day. So that's cool. Just like I said, you have too many things. Even with creating in the Temple of Darkness mini comic, for example, which is another great one. Because, well, first, I was just going to say about your interpretation of He-Man. It's definitely pretty. It's unique and iconic, meaning it doesn't look like others, which, you know, in some of the other mini comics, I noticed that maybe I didn't know if it was depending on the artist you worked with or how they asked if they wanted a different style of He-Man. But I always like there's a kind of a really, I don't know, strong jawed, unique, you know, slick look for He-Man that you normally did in almost all of your mini comics. And even the sword was different. But like in Temple of the Darkness, there was these other things that I liked. There was the time demons. Now, again, completely out of your head or something they like, because I love using that image when I do, like, you know, crazy photos online. I love those time demons.
I wanted to, I needed to have them get destroyed so that I didn't want them to look human. So, making them, you know, we could destroy them real easy, you know, stab them, crap, you know, do everything we wanted to, as long as they're not alive. So that's one reason I designed it like that.
Well, that worked out well. Like you said, I guess, yeah, then it's something that can be destroyed easy without having too much violence and blood. But Tyler, I didn't know if you wanted to ask a couple questions, because I know there's another mini comic he did that you always love, Beyond Clash of Arms, where it was a nice, good, lots of fighting. What about the one, you know, Hordak, the Ruthless Leader's Revenge? That was always one of your favorite battle royal ones, wasn't it?
God. Yeah, that was another first impression of a lot of characters for me, even before I owned them, was based on how Larry drew them in that mini comic. And it really added a lot of edginess to those characters, because they all looked like, I mean, I think my favorite thing about your work, Larry, is how you do fights. Yeah, I mean, the ferocity that you would draw in the villains when they're attacking, and this one in particular, when you've got the Horde and Skeletor's wars clashing together and fighting, it really, to me, as I'm looking at this as a kid, these guys look like they are really going to tear each other apart, and you drew that perfectly. I looked at these characters these guys are about as serious as it could get, just. The intensity in their faces, it looks like people. How could anybody look at this toy line and see anything that this is more than something for kids, because there was so much an adult approach to it. You know, it really felt like, well, I guess obviously since you were heavily inspired by Jack Kirby and comic books in general, especially X-Men and things like that. When you're thinking about, you know, drawing, especially villains, I love how you draw villains. I mean, do you have any kind of inspiration for drawing evil characters in general? I mean, I know you just kind of draw it from mind, but there was such a distinct look to the villains that you drew. I mean, like from Hordak, Grizzlor, Whiplash, Jitsu.
Right.
I'm talking too much. I need to listen.
And some of these characters, I did talk to some for at Filmation, because I didn't know their what were they? Were they like the group dynamics were? What kind of character was this? What kind of character was that? And I might have talked to Tom Cito, who was over there, a friend of mine, or one of my other friends. As a, you know, this guy's a badass, or this guy's like a sniveling coward. I just wanted to give me an overview of the characters, so that when I was drawing it, I can, okay, that's what this character does, and let's go for it, you know. And in this book, yeah, I did ask friends to who I'm dealing with, because other than Skeletor, I didn't know the characters. I knew Skeletor, but I didn't know the others. And so when he told me what each guy did, how the group dynamics worked, then I was, okay, I got it. Now I can draw it. I just needed a thumbnail of what everybody's purpose was in the world of He-Man.
And when you're getting this description of all these characters, have you balked at any of them? Did you like, well, that sounds kind of silly, you know, or do you think, hey, that's a cool idea? Like, what is your initial impression of a lot of these characters that you get? I mean, are certain characters a challenge to kind of realize on the page, even if you got the toy, or is it all just, you know, you're like, hey, I can make all this work?
It's more of the latter, basically telling me, you know, what the character, once I found out what the characters could do, I can make anything work. This is the badass, this is the sycophant, this is whatever. But also knowing what can they do, like, can this character fly? Can he shoot claws? Can he, you know, give me something what he can do, and then I can play it up in the books. And so that's what I just needed a thumbnail from my friends, like, of the characters and what they thought he could do. And then I could just, you know, okay, I can make it work. I got a script, and I can, I can make it as possible. Basically, I tried to make these things as if I was drawing a Marvel comic book.
It certainly
and
shows.
If I had real big pages, I could do a lot more detail. But, you know, I condensed the storytelling into these little panels as best I could. My thing is that when I'm trying to draw stories, I want you to be able to tell a story without reading the dialogue. That's my thing. And that carries through into the animation work that I did when I would get storyboards from people. And they would try and get work for me. I'd tell them, oh, give me a sample of your work. And then I would take the storyboards and I'd just start flipping through the pages. And I wanted to see how far I could get into their story, the dialogue. And if I could get really deep into the story without having to read it, that's a very good storyteller. And so that's what I tried to make sure when I did my panels, to try and tell a story as clearly as possible without the need of reading it. You can tell what's going on from the body posing, the composition, and the layouts, the layering of characters, sorry.
Yeah, because you really went into a lot of detail. Like, I mean, there's that one panel in the Hordak mini comic where he's having that discussion with Skeletor, and you draw Hordak as if like he's like, all right, I'll sweeten the deal here, and you have him throwing his arm up. It's just a very distinct, you know, piece of body language that you threw into that to kind of really show this character's like, okay, I'm going to bargain for it. It's just one of those things I remember from that comic. Like you're saying, they're just trying to tell a story. Like, clearly, without words, you know that these guys are negotiating. He's like, all right, it's amazing. I guess to go back and look through it, a lot of these, and not actually read it. Well, that's pretty much what I did as a kid, because I couldn't read when I first got these mini comics. So majors three, four, I'm looking at them and just looking at the pictures. So actually, you did exactly that, because I couldn't read it, so I definitely could get an idea of, okay, who's teaming up with who, who's fighting who, and why they're doing it. So you definitely succeeded in that.
Yeah, I think that, like I said, I think all of that approach from my animation training of storyboarding scripts, storyboarding, interpreting scripts visually. And so I apply, you know, I guess I unconsciously, that's part of my training. So when I did the books, it just came with me naturally to approach the books that way, you know, especially since the books were, you know, all of these little panels here. I had to tell a story in these little things, you know? So I had to go with the most obvious way to tell a story, you know, and try and convey the emotions in itty bitty panels.
Now, that with crazy. That one in particular, you're given so many villains and heroes to feature. I mean, is that like that splash page you just held up with Skeletor and the Horde all coming through the portal at the same time. Was that fun? Well, I mean, was that something that the script called for, or did you like just decide, you know what, I'm going to use this guy in this splash page and make them part of the story? Or was that something that you were told, we need you to feature, you know, Whiplash and Jitsu and Cobra Khan in this along with the current Horde members, or how did that go about?
Well, basically, the features that they wanted to be in and what they did was up to me. And so I knew I had a lot of little dialogue to get through. So I tried to tell the story in these little panels and kind of paced everything. So I wanted to get the fight scenes in big pages. That was basically it, just pacing it.
Do we lose them?
And
You're breaking up again a bit there, Larry. That's probably one of my favorite ones you drew up at the top there with the evil warriors and the Horde running at each other. That's something that's been burned into my brain since I was three.
Yeah, that's weird. I was going to bring it up too, Tyler. That, like I said, it's all the moments we've been saying about Larry creating all these iconic moments is how they were getting ready to fight against each other. I mean, just the charging back and forth. But not only that, it's on page 10 of that comic at the top. Just looking at how all of the heroes are in shock, like, what is going on? What's happening? Because the villains are fighting each other, and the heroes have nothing to do with it. And I love the expressions you put on every one of their faces. I mean, it's priceless. I mean, I love every moment you create, but you did a great job of just capturing an emotion of, like, you know, you could just be, you know, shocked, like, what is happening? So you did that great. From the fighting to the facial expressions, all are just amazing.
I tried to pace the story so I could get some full-page action scenes into it. You know, very much like a Marvel comic book. You know, have some fun, the Jack Kirby jump, John Buscema, you know, big splash pages and stuff. But what I think is my strength as a director, as a storyboard artist. I love doing action scenes. I mean, we were working on Spider and His Amazing Friends. We were doing Pride of the X-Men. Yeah, so usually what happened would be Will Mania would get Act 1, Rick Hulbert would get Act 2, and then I would try and always get Act 3 because that's where all the fighting would happen. So I always tried to get Act 3 of whatever show I'm working on because I can have more fun that way.
Oh, no wonder that sequence kicked so much ass, man. It's because of you. Oh, my gosh, man. My favorite part of the Pride of the X-Men was the big run through Asteroid M with, you know, just like a checklist fight. You had Wolverine and Toad, White Queen and Cyclops. Oh, it was incredible.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to do. The background on that is that that was a one-shot. We tried to sell to the network, you know, obviously the X-Men, but it didn't sell. And so we did our best shot, but our boss, her name was Margaret Lesh. She was the head of Marvel. And when she left 5 or 6 years, she became the head of Fox Children's Television. And as the head, she could green light a show that we were trying to sell a long time ago. And so she brought myself in, Rick Hulbert, Will Mineo, Eric Lewall and his wife. And we both, all of us got together and created the show that you guys saw as a kid.
Man. I can't believe people would be lost listening to this. This is the man, you know, I'm responsible for the famous X-Men animated series that ran in the 90s with the real catchy music and the awesome opening sequence and giving us the definitive, you know, cartoon version of Wolverine and so many other definitive versions here. So we have this man to thank for giving us that very, very well done animated series, and especially Pride of the X-Men. I've been carrying a flag for that ever since I saw commercials for it as a kid on the Marvel Action Universe. That was my first time actually seeing Wolverine was seeing commercials for that Pride of the X-Men. So that Yeah, that was, I was like, and I thought he was called X-Man. Like, he's the only one that stood out to me.
Yeah.
I got older, I was like, no, his name is X-Man. He's like, no, it's Wolverine. So I learned that before watching the new animated series, because yeah. I was really into Marvel Comics a lot at that time, too, with the action figures. The arcade game that looked like it was pretty much based on Pride of the X-Men that was played in extensively.
Oh, yes. Still, you're right.
Yeah, I figured when I played that, I was like, this got to be based on Pride, because all the character designs from Dazzler and Storm, Nightcrawler, Cyclops, they all look, even the villains are all spot on. And it just makes me think, like, characters like Wendigo and Nimrod looks like this is probably how they would have looked in the X-Men cartoon had the show continued on the way that it had.
Yeah. I tend to agree with you. Yeah, we shot our best shot, and we didn't, you know, we were lucky that it worked, thank goodness.
Oh, and, yes, it
but
did.
What most people don't know is that Fox had no idea what the X-Men were. I mean, Margaret Lesh, who used to be my boss, did, but her boss and everybody else had no idea what the X-Men were.
How do we get Larry to give us an autograph for any of this stuff? I mean, who do we have to kill to get John Hancock on mini comic or anything for that matter?
Oh, well, you guys just send me a copy. I'll sign it. I got no problems with that. That's cool. I can give you my mailing address and just.
I wish we could get our hands on some. I mean, what'd be cool is, you know, all those splash pages you're showing and stuff. Those would just make awesome big posters. It would be cool to ever see something like that. But so you got me thinking too much now, Larry. I'm thinking about too many things here, and I guess not do it. Which it's gonna bring me to another. I gotta bring up another mini comic. This is the one probably I looked at the most as a kid, over and over and over, because I was expecting something else. Meaning. It was the Powers of Grayskull, The Legend Begins, you know, the first of a three-part. Now, this one, God, I mean, I loved it because it was just so cool to see him going into the past. And then who's this mysterious guy, you know, of course, being Hero, but who's this? And then you see the Snake Man and Skeletor. I mean, it was just dinosaurs. It was insanity for a young child's brain to see this much stuff. And I mean, God, you even get the Snake Man sitting there eating, like, you know, some critters or bugs and stuff. It's something, again, you really don't see too often.
Yeah, they're barbecuing like a big dragonfly.
Yeah, dragonfly and snacking on it. And another thing is, just to let you know, there's another character that you, at least design-wise, did for this that showed up in action figure form, you know, for the new Classics line, and that's He-Man in disguise. They call him, I think it's Preternia disguise He-Man. So
yeah,
that look.
Oh, okay.
What was, and I guess we've always been asking inspiration, but what, you know, what made you go with, like, kind of like the robe with the red hood and kind of a, you know, a little, like, mask over the eyes, almost like Robin or the Lone Ranger, you know? What kind of, like, inspired you to do that design for him?
it's going to sound repetitive, but it drew itself. I just drew it.
Okay. I thought maybe there was something specific. But, again, it's a cool design. Well, hey, it's cool enough to – well, they made a figure of him. So you've gotten probably your – concepts turned into figures more than probably any from the mini comics because of just all the the original designs. But see, like I said, this comic, it meant so much to me because I was obsessed then. I was going to, I can't tell you the store how many times, waiting to see part two and part three of this mini comic, which obviously never happened, which I guess brings me to this, and I'm sure you probably answered it before, but we can, for the new listeners, ask this again. Did you ever remember having possibly scripts for a part two or three of that? Because as you know, they never happened. Do you remember if it was going somewhere along those lines?
I was waiting for the part two, but it never, you know, Lee never passed it on, you know, it never got done. And so when I was doing these He-Man comic books, it was actually after work. Because I was still working at Marvel Productions, so I always would tell, you know, Ashley, where's the next script? He said, oh, it's coming. So, it's, you know, while I'm waiting, it's coming. I'm working on TV shows, so I just kind of like, oh, it never showed up. So, okay, I just, you know, I figured the toy company will get around to it when they want to make some more money, so.
Well, here's Joe Amato's pitch. This is, again, another brainstorming idea of mine. Now, they did for the new Classics line, they kind of like retold the story again, and they did the part two and three, but it was through a different vision.
It was god-awful.
Yeah, it wasn't really exciting. Fans really didn't flip over it. The story was a little eh, you know, but for fans that loved it, you know, more respect and power to them. But for me, I always felt like there was something else that we needed. Now, with Super 7 doing vintage figures coming up soon, fans have already been polling, and some people said they would love to finally see Eldor and Hero made in vintage form. Now, if God willingly they decide to give their vision of possibly the part two and three, or maybe let's say a real vintage 80 sequel, I'm going to make sure I'm going to push for you. I would love to see you, since you did this first one. It would be fantastic. And I know you'd love to give, again, your visions for a part two and part three. I mean, if that's possible, that's something you definitely would want to do.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I would love to do it. I mean, this is when I did this issue, it was like, that was a lot of fun. I was doing, you know, I had fun drawing that, you know, and my inker on this one was Bruce Timm.
Yes, yes.
The guy who did Batman. Bruce Timm and I both started at Filmation together. I first met him on The Lone Ranger. He was working with Russ Heath on Lone Ranger. So we have a history that goes back pretty far.
Hey, look at that. It's I think, a psychic connection. You just said The Lone Ranger. You channeled that into the design of that He-Man in there. See? Yeah. There it is.
It could have been very subconscious. You're right. It could have been there.
Now, did you get to design pretty much all the dinosaurs the way you wanted to, like adding all the mechanical parts or choosing which dinosaurs you wanted to use? Because that was always a fascinating thing about those particular dinosaurs, is all the mechanical parts and things like that. I mean, is that all pretty much just you getting to be creative, or was that kind of one of those small directives that the script called for?
I think I'm looking through the book right now, and a lot of, except for the T-Rex, I think I just made up everything else. I think one T-Rex, which had this reptilian guy on it, I can't see his name anymore.
Yeah, King Hiss.
Yeah, I think that was a toy, but everything else I made up based upon his toy and his design, but I made up everything else.
I liked your unique look of the mecha drone, if you will. See, that's for the Tyrannosaurus Rex, that, you know, vintage toy. There was this, like, mechanical there was this button you'd push in towards his back, this lever, and out would come flying this mecha drone thing that'd go flipping and flopping and rolling on the floor. And I like that you incorporated that with your own twist into that when it flew and it knocked, you know, Preternia and He-Man off of Bionatop. So I like, I mean, like I said, everything about this comic is just, it's fantastic. Every piece of it is just, again, a whole action packed, beautiful art, a very good story that unfortunately we never got more, but it's like I said, Talonar, we're going to push for it, man. We're going to push to chart.
Oh, without a doubt. Absolutely. I mean, it's the work.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Larry. This is all about you, man. You talk, man.
I was going to say, you know, now that I'm retired, I have a lot of time to do a lot of drawings now. So, if they ever want to contact me, I'd love to do work on He-Man, the vintage stuff, and see if they, I like to throw my two cents into it again.
Just out of curiosity, would you ever do a commission illustration or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. I got time.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to get your contact info for fans. God, from what Tyler's saying, fans, if they would, I'm sure at the end of the show you give contact info, I'm sure you'd probably have people that want to do commissions contact you about, like, some autographs.
I want illustrations of every character. Like, I want Larry to illustrate, you know, concept characters. I want him to illustrate everybody here, man. I want to see how his interpretation of the characters, that even the ones he didn't get around to drawing, like Snout Spout or I'm trying to think of one. There's so many characters. Mechanic, you know.
Right.
I mean, pretty much characters that you drew so. I just want to. I'm speaking sporadically here because my brain is just like I said. The excitement is through the roof right now.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for how you drew Clawful and Jitsu in Clash of Arms, because as a kid and to this day, that was considered the macho of the macho when it came to villains as a kid. I just thought the way you drew those guys to me was how I envisioned, you know, running around in the backyard pretending to be Clawful or Jitsu. I drew them in that mini comic. I just saw them as just like, these are some of the, you know, baddest SOBs on Eternia, just because of how you drew them, so vicious looking and just like, these are like some of the toughest guys you would find like at a tavern, you know, in a bar fight or something like that. They were just, it's just, I always go to those two, the way that you drew them. It's just like my definitive Clawful and Jitsu. To this day, it just resonated with me so much, and I can't explain it why, but it really did. And I just want to thank you for the talents that you put, well, of course, on everything, but in the way you drew those characters in particular, I thank you so much for that.
I didn't want to make it like for too kiddy. I think, you know, let's go for it. Let's have these guys really go at each other and have some fun, you know?
It's made it so good. Absolutely. With his kind of mindset, that's why this was so awesome. This is so cool, man.
Well, Tyler, what you think? I mean, I didn't know if you wanted to ask any final questions for Larry, and because we got to have him on again sometime, like you said.
I know. Would you be interested in coming back again, Larry, to talk to us some more about more of the work on the mini comics and your various other projects? I mean, I still would love to ask you about G.I. Joe at some point, too, and things like that. And then tons of He-Man questions we'd love to still ask. We've already probably taken too much of your time as it is here, and you may need to get back to your family. Would you be interested
in
getting some time?
Yeah, sure. That'll be fine. And I could probably figure out why.
Uh-oh. It just happened again when he was figuring it out. It just froze. So
it's locked up. It just locked that. Hello, can you see me?
Yes.
Yeah. Another time would be great, and hopefully, I will have figured out why my laptop is acting so stupid. Next time, we can have a better conversation without the stuff cutting off and on and stuff like that.
Well, it still came out great. I mean, it still was great. There's a couple, you know, issues, but we all had that on our end. But still, fans got plenty of info, and I'm sure enjoyed hearing everything that you had to say.
Hopefully I've answered some questions. I'm trying to, you know, as you're talking to him, I'm looking through the books when you're talking and trying to see, what did I draw here?
Yeah. Hey, you found out a lot of things, like you said, some different stuff. You've seen the blood. You found out about Garn being in an episode of Filmation. So, hey, you found a lot of cool stuff. And, hey, you can let your wife know she had a guest appearance on the live video stream. We got to see your wife.
Yeah.
He's welcome to join you on the second part, by all means.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I'm the one who never throws anything away. My wife throws away everything. And so I know I have the originals to those I have some originals to those mini comic books somewhere in storage.
Uh-oh.
Somewhere.
Uh-oh, Jesus. Tyler just passed
out. Bring those out, man. No way. You can't be holding out now.
Me and Tyler.
I got to go through the storage. And believe me, it's a pile of whatever.
Oh, even more. This is fantastic.
And I got to find it because I know it's in there somewhere. I got, 25 years of storyboards and model sheets and stuff that's just sitting in storage. I don't even know what I have.
Road trip to Larry's house. It's going to be a weekend at Larry's. Let's go, Tyler.
We're coming to Ohio to pick you up. We're heading out to California tomorrow.
We are coming over. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I have a lot of that stuff.
That's unbelievable. That's information that needs to be shared, man.
Wow. It looks like my brain is just shut down because I was thinking about these things.
I feel like I'm just speechless now. I was like, what can I say now? I just
because I was going to ask one more question about one of the mini comics, and then when he said that about having the originals and stuff, I'm just freaking out. Okay, another hypothetical. I know we said we're about wrapping up, but I got to ask one more, and it's in the comic with Geldor at the end, and this is another fan, I guess, debated question of what really happened, and that's when the glass, you know, falls, and then that tree grows, and you hear Geldor say something like, you know, the tree is devouring me, or I'm being devoured by the tree, and then suddenly the tree sprouts way up, and then you don't see Geldor no more. My question is, is that being said as literally like the tree actually devoured and he became part of it, or meaning it overtook him, threw him up in the sky, and okay, Geldor might have lived, or did Geldor really get consumed by this tree? That people have actually debated that back and forth. I didn't know what the script said and how you were supposed to draw. You know, I was curious.
The script actually had no definition as to what the tree was doing to him. So for me, since it was a magic liquid, I assumed that the tree was making Geldor part of the. It was trapping him in magically inside the tree. Geldor didn't become the tree. He just got magically trapped in the tree. So they didn't kill him. He just can't get out of it. He's like trapped in a magic. That's my interpretation.
Kind of like a phantom zone in a tree almost. He's just trapped in the tree.
There you go.
So they could bring him back whenever they wanted to. You know?
I like that. We have a definitive answer to Geldor's fate here. We need Larry to illustrate the sequel of Geldor's return here.
Exactly.
Chops out of the tree with a battle axe, and he's coming back for vengeance, you know, like a battle
of hell. That's the way I would interpret it, because if you brought him back, you could just have him. Something happens to the tree that allows him to break out. You see a hand come out, break out, and
there you go.
I can see Larry join like a fist bursting out, an axe coming out, and then just splitting the tree in two.
Check it out. Oh. The tree has to die for Geldor to live. Look at that. Now, there you go. See, we found out a cool thing. Yeah. Another thing.
Yes, when people get wind of this idea by Larry here, I think it's going to be a lot. It's just going to be a big tidal wave of reaction for them.
The return of Geldor. Awesome. The return of Geldor. Oh my God, Jesus! I can't stop because now I'm getting too giddy. I'm starting to get giddy again. I'm until Super 7. They need to make a vintage Geldor figure, and if they make a vintage Geldor figure, he has to come with his own mini comic, and it's the return of Geldor. There you go. That's what I'm putting out there. Oh Jesus.
Okay,
Tyler. We might have to wrap it up because I'm like going into shock or something. It's exciting.
I'm trying to remember this man has a family and a wife and everything. We can't keep this man away from
for the full yeah.
any duties here. Otherwise, we would have you here all
the whole 8 hours of what Doug said. Yeah, we might have to have him the whole 8 hours.
Sure. Okay. Well, yeah, we can do this again. I have a lot of. I have a lot of history, I guess. I've been, like I said, I think when I talked earlier, it wasn't on a group chat. But I said I was a very lucky man. I was in the right place at the right time for the Spider-Man books, the He-Man comic books. The G.I. Joe, the G.I. Joe movie intro. I made that all up. There was no script, but I made
it
all up.
Done. It still remains the best piece of animation in the G.I. Joe cartoon. He even did like the opening parts of like the panning towards the Cobra Terrordrome and everything, like kind of going into the throne room of Serpentor and everything.
Yeah, I did the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. Oh man, good stuff too.
Yeah, that was all me. First director on Captain Planet. I was producer director on Karate Kid. I did the opening X-Men titles too. It was awesome.
Oh my gosh!
It's the right time for the thing,
so awesome too. Okay, well, I guess we'll go ahead and start wrapping the show up here. Larry, is there anything you want to plug before we wrap up, or how fans can get in touch with you, or and let them know how much they appreciate your work, or what can we do to help send you off here?
Okay. Well, I guess, you know, people that want to talk with me, I guess you can send my
what was your email?
He said it's LarryToons@gmail.com. LarryToons@gmail.com.
And they can contact me there, you know, if they have any questions or whatever. And I did a comic book through Charlton Bullseye called The Vanguards, which is like, at the time, it was back in the 80s somewhere, superhero girls, but they're actually freedom fighters that I'm trying to revive, and I want to try and see if I can update it for 2000, you know, for today. And to get that off the ground, I'm doing some model sheets. I'm writing up a story. So I'm trying to get back into doing comic books again.
Awesome.
Yeah. Have some fun, you know. Doing the He-Man comic books and doing my own little comic books, those are the three things that I think I had the most fun in my career, because those projects, pretty much I could do what I wanted, and that's when I have the most fun, when I could just let my creative juices go and just go with my gut instinct as to what makes a good story, what makes a good scene, what makes a good fight. So that's what I'm working on now. In addition, you know, I'm helping my wife recover, but in between that, I'm trying to get back to being a writer again and, you know, have some fun.
So cool. Well, Joe, I guess, all I'm going to do is I'm going to usually, Larry, I make recommendations at the end of the show and everything. All I'm going to do is recommend recommend going back and looking at all the mini comics that Larry has worked on from the He-Man series, the X-Men series, Pride of the X-Men. It's on YouTube. I say heavily check it out right now. So those are my recommendations for anything that Larry Houston has worked on. Those are my recommendations for the
appreciate that. That's you never know when you're working on the shows I was working on, if I affected anybody out there in the world. You know, I just try to do is when I'm working on those shows like He-Man and X-Men, I try and remember what it was like to be a kid inside of me. If you can get excited about something I'm drawing or writing, it'll transfer to someone else and they'll interpret it and have the same excitement and giddiness that I would have had.
Mission accomplished, man.
You know?
And you definitely, did what you were trying to do. Yes, it worked perfectly. I mean, the fans you reached with these mini comics, like I said, we've been talking about them for over 30 years. So it's pretty perfect. And like I said, we'll continue to talk about it. It gives so many great topics out there. And then hopefully, like I said, there can even be more in the future. And then you can reach, you know, a new generation of fans and even the fans who love all your stuff like we do. Hopefully we can see some new stuff too and appreciate. So yeah, as for my recommendations, like I said, I would just suggest everybody read any of these mini comics that Larry Houston did. And I am going to try to, in a couple weeks, maybe put a little petition and try to put something together to hopefully see about getting you. And that's serious, doing stuff for hopefully a new set of mini comics, especially now with this Geldor idea, my brain has exploded. So it's going to happen. We're going to bring the past and the present together.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'd love to do it. And keep me in the loop. I'd love to know what happens.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Well, Larry, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to sit down and talk with us and let the fans hear what you have to say, because we couldn't appreciate it more. And we look forward to the inevitable sequel with Larry.
Okay. Thank you. And I'll do my best to see what I can find in storage and maybe have something to show you next time.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks again, Larry. It was great having you on.
All right. Take care, guys.
Okay. Take care.
All right, guys. Thank you for watching our show tonight. And a special shout out to Doongi Forever, who's been hanging out in the YouTube chat. He's been watching the entire show through all of the audio problems. So a special thank you to him. Don't forget, you can also call our 24-hour voicemail line. It's area code 217-953-4025. Call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and let us know how you like the show. Thanks for watching, guys, and we're signing off.